This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I'm bringing you some stories tonight. I think some ones you'll enjoy. Maybe a little bit scary. So beware. I'll give you a moment to get settled. I'll be right back here at 104.3 KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. Hello, this is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales tonight, and I have two stories. The first one is from The Dark Tales from Southeast Alaska, Shy Ghost Dancing by Mark Zeiger. It's titled Whacking the Groaner. Fog swirling on the dark surface of the cold North Pacific alternately hid and revealed a sodden, freezing boy. In shock, close to drowning, struggling to keep his head above water, Tyler Croft had just witnessed something thought to be extinct for some 65 million years. There's an old story told in Southeast Alaska. When the Russians came to the chain of islands, they named the Alexander Archipelago. They marked areas significant to navigation with buoys. The story tells how the appearance of one of these markers caused great alarm among the natives. In nearby villages, bravest men canoed out to examine this strange object. They could make no sense of what they saw. One man raised a heavy war club and struck the boy. The huge barrel bloomed and reverberated, a noise so loud, so unexpected, and so strange to the men that everyone in the canoe fainted dead away. Now buoys and markers in a variety of shapes, sizes, and uses dot the treacherous Alaskan coast. Young Tyler Croft and his friends often fell asleep at night or woke in the morning to the sound of a whistle buoy. Tyler's father, whose people came from New England, called these buoys groaners. Coastal folk, whose lives and livelihood depend on buoys, would no more tamper with a buoy than you would a traffic light or power line. Tyler and his friend Christopher forgot or overlooked this important point one gray day in early September. It began when Tyler told the story of the natives' encounter with the Russian marker, and they all dropped dead on the spot. Tyler finished with a flourish much appreciated by his listener. Wow, Christopher paused to think this over. What killed them? He finally asked, feeling slightly foolish. What do you mean? Tyler narrowed his eyes and cocked his head slightly to one side, an expression he hoped conveyed scorn. Well, Christopher hesitated, was it the sound the boy made? Did the vibration kill them or what? Tyler's scorn vanished. It was his turn to think for a moment. A sound intruded on the lull in their conversation, a low, mournful moan. It penetrated the thick fog to where they perched on a drift log at the edge of the Pacific. They both looked out over the water, knowing the boy they heard lay completely out of sight in the mist. They looked at each other. They grinned. 20 minutes later, they paddled through the fog in Tyler's family canoe, following the intermittent call of the groaners somewhere out in the channel. They carried little cargo, mostly snack food raided from home cupboards, and a small emergency pack included as a rule on any canoe outing. They also carried Christopher's prize white ash baseball bat. "Are you sure you can find it in this fog?" Christopher asked. "I can find it. Look, it's right there." Tyler dragged his paddle to slow the canoe, gliding gently up to the large, dark shape looming out of the mist. Christopher glanced back at his friend for reassurance, then carefully rose, balancing himself against the gunwales. Once set, he raised his bat and took a careful aim at the low metal base that floated the marker in the channel. After a short pause in which each boy steeled himself against the possibly lethal consequences of their action, Christopher swung the bat. They judged the result to be quite satisfying. They had pounded on empty 55-gallon drums before, but this sounded twice as deep, twice as loud. The reverberation rattled their teeth, filling the air with sound. Neither of them died, nor even fainted. Christopher and Tyler grinned at each other. "Do it again," Tyler gushed. "Naturally," drawled Christopher, hitching his pants like a big league batter at the plate. He drew back and whacked the base of the boy once more. This time, the impact coincided with the long, low whistle of the mechanism. The combined tones delighted the boys. They giggled crazily, shaking the canoe. "One more time," Tyler shouted. "Wait for the whistle and do it again. That was awesome." Christopher measured his chance, then swung a third time. The boy emitted a simultaneous boom and moan. Soon Christopher had established a rhythm and struck the metal skin just as the next whistle began, creating an eerie vibration that shimmered across the water. Each tone elicited screams and wild laughter from the two boys. "What was that?" Tyler asked suddenly, gripping the gunwales and peering seaward through the fog. Christopher concentrated on his timing, waiting for the next swing. "What was what?" he asked, shrugging, not really listening for an answer. "Something's out there," Tyler said as Christopher beat the boy again. The edge in Tyler's voice caught Christopher's attention as the tandem sounds rolled over the water. He turned to look at his friend. Immediately, he crouched in the canoe, seizing the gunwales himself. "What do you see? Is it a whale?" "I don't know. Could be. Something big moved out there. It jiggled the boat. Did you feel it?" Christopher shook his head, peering around. "There!" Tyler exclaimed, pointing toward the open water at the sound of a deep, chuffing hiss. "Hear it spout?" His companion nodded, his whole being focused toward the sound source. They barely heard the creature's misty exhalation above the dying sound of the big boy. Tense, excited, they crouched, listening and watching. Moments passed. The groaner gave forth half a dozen times as they waited. The boys slowly relaxed. "Probably just went by," Tyler shrugged. "Dad says they can cruise for a long time underwater if they want to. Come on, bang that thing a couple more times." Christopher retrieved his bat and positioned himself, waiting for the next whistle. When it came, he swung, creating the odd sound again. The boys collapsed in fresh laughter. Abruptly, something collided with the hull of the canoe somewhere amidships. Tyler threw himself down. Christopher lost his balance and joined his friend in the canoe bottom with a thump. The water around them roiled. Their craft abruptly lifted almost clear of the surface, then began to bump and shudder as it slowly settled. To Tyler, it felt like dragging a rough-cut handsaw slowly across the edge of a board. His mind's eye showed him a serrated back passing beneath the thin skin of their canoe. He opened his mouth to shout to Christopher, but an unbelievable sight stopped him. On the far side of the groaner, the slate-colored water bulged and lightened. A streamlined form pushed up and up until the surface tension broke. The split water whitened and foamed around the force passing through it. Tyler's eyes widened, his mouth making a little O of wonder as a massive form twisted and rolled, chopping the water around it. The object seemed thick, slick, yet pebbly or scaly. It appeared to be light, mossy green. Tyler's young mind processed sensory data, comparing, then discarding information, trying to comprehend what he saw. The idea that they were encountering a whale at extreme close range still held, although he could not see anything that would confirm that assumption. As the thing rolled, a huge pale flipper hove above the surface of the water, wavered and slapped down hard, drenching the boys as they trembled in their pitifully small canoe. Tyler had seen humpback whales behave like this, lazily waving their impossibly long flippers. This flipper was not, he recognized, even in his shocked state, a whale's. Stouter, more suggestive of a hand, this flipper had ridges beneath the green skin, like long, fused fingers. The strange creature suddenly flipped and dove, buffeting the canoe. Tyler scanned frantically, still trying to get a mental picture of the whole being as parts of it flashed past. It was incredibly fast, disappearing completely in an instant. The huge body displaced masses of water as it went, sending the canoe swinging wildly in a deep whirlpool until it rammed hard broadside against the groaner's base, just as the boy began emitting another low moan. Quite unintentionally, the groaner was whacked again, sending out the tandem vibration. The water bulged and split more quickly this time as a huge, sharp muzzle pushed out of the water. An immense saurian form rose above them. Tyler saw an eyeball as big as his father's fist, massive jaws open, showing large pointed teeth and a gullet like a mine shaft. The creature rose farther in the air, then blasted the cowering children with a roar that perfectly mimicked the combined sound of the beaten boy and its signal. Tyler and Christopher instantly released the gunwales to mash their palms over their ears against the rush of sound. They grabbed for handholds again as the great beast sank lower into the water, then turned and dashed the surface into spume as it dove. Christopher's mouth worked rapidly, but it took a moment for Tyler to make sense of the words his friend chanted in a questioning sing-song. Tylosaur? Kronosaur? Zeuglodon? Mosasaur? Platycarpus? Tylosaur? Kronosaur? The chant focused Tyler's thoughts, allowing him to consider what Christopher already had and was trying to work through for himself. The two boys loved prehistoric animals. They encountered imaginary dinosaurs often enough in their play. Had they just seen a real prehistoric sea creature, a mosasaurus, or something similar? They had heard the theories of the Loch Ness monster. They spent plenty of time discussing the reported monsters in their own state of Lake Iliana and Raspberry Strait, far to the northwest. They delighted in the possibility that undocumented survivors of prehistoric ages flourished in populations unconfirmed by science. Tyler knew, but still could not accept what they had encountered. He had played with his own toy, Mosasaurus, so often, so intently, had imagined it from so many angles that even now, animated and magnified far beyond the miniature, he recognized it. Only common sense slowed the revelation. Boyish fantasy couched in parascientific speculation was one thing. Actually confronting a real creature of this sort was another matter entirely. They had no time to thoroughly consider the situation. The canoe, now half full of water, still thrashed about. Tyler grabbed a paddle and worked to steady the craft, bawling at Christopher to bail. Christopher retrieved a coffee can floating in the wash and frantically scooped water from the canoe. As Tyler struggled with his paddle, the canoe prow swung once more against the buoy flat. It boomed in time with the next whistle. Before the sound faded, the behemoth returned. Rocketing straight out of the water, it rose high, throwing spray in all directions. The terrified children saw a gigantic saurian form with huge oar-like flippers, a long, sharp dragon's head, and a ridge fin cresting down the creature's back. As it ascended, it blasted their ears with its bellow, drowning out the groaner's fading vibration. "It's a mating call," Tyler murmured. The groaner called it. We called it. The wave created by the massive bulk rising from the depths struck the canoe, knocking the prow into the air. Christopher flew from the boat, vanishing in the water with a pitifully small splash. Tyler screamed, clinging to the canoe as it bobbed in the chop. He tore his eyes away from the creature to search for his friend through the showering spray. The Mosasaurus settled heavily back into the water, regarding the metal boy briefly. Suddenly, it swung its massive head, striking the marker with its long, tooth-filled jaw. The groaner's metal frame shrieked as it sped through the water, crashing against the canoe. With nothing to weigh it down other than a small boy in the stern, the canoe skipped and tumbled across the surface of the water. Tyler scrabbled for a handhold, gained it, but found no support. The next instant, he surfaced in numbingly cold water, thrashing and spitting. His right hand still clung to the handhold he had grasped, the strap of the emergency pack his father insisted he carry in the canoe. The creature, agitated now, swirled around the boy in tight loops, battering it with its snout. It savaged the marker with its huge jaws, the long, sharp teeth puncturing the support girders in several places, denting them deeply in others. Tyler washed this way and that, struggling to keep breathing as wave after wave from the thrashing beast doused him. Between gouts of seawater, he searched for the canoe and for Christopher. The canoe appeared briefly once, flying through the air, launched by a sweep of the creature's huge tail. To Tyler's momentary relief, it was too far away to endanger him. The pack in his hand grew heavy. Tyler's shock-fogged mind cleared for a second. He stopped struggling long enough to pull out a packet of flares before letting the pack sink. Freeing the pull chain of one flare caused him to lose the others. They may have floated away. He couldn't be sure. The boy raised the flare above his head, sinking as he did so. He pointed it skyward as well as he could and yanked the chain, hoping he had managed to ignite the signal before it submerged. He felt brief heat on his hands, then painful cold as he slipped completely underwater. He immediately lowered his arms, putting his remaining strength into a stroke to bring his head back to the surface. Fisting his eyes clear of salt water, Tyler saw the flares glow far above. He had managed to ignite it and send it high enough that it might be seen. Looking around, he also saw the Mosasaur. It seemed to have calmed slightly. He located the monster just as it shot past the boy, sending a new wall of force through the surrounding water. It seemed to focus on something ahead of it, making a lightning-fast extra lunge, then slowing and swooping back toward the boy. With a toss of its missile-shaped snout, it seemed to swallow. Tyler could barely think what had just happened and didn't want to. The creature turned toward Tyler. The boy shivered from the icy water and from uncontrollable terror. The beast plowed to within 20 feet of the floating child, then veered off toward the boy. Ramming with its head at incredible speed, the Leviathan blasted the groaner off its moorings, sending it rushing through the water. Then the creature dove, ducking downward and flowing in a tightly curved hump of green skin and frilled crest that seemed to go on and on as Tyler watched. Finally, the tip of the long tail appeared, flicked, and vanished. The canoe had disappeared. Tyler saw no trace of Christopher. Even the boy was gone, leaving him submerged to his trembling chin in the suddenly flat, calm, slate-colored water. The fog settled around him, cloaking him in silence. A sudden thought robbed Tyler of his momentary overwhelming relief. He remembered the creature's freight train rush out of the deep. He wondered if another one might be imminent, this time from directly below, with those huge jaws and that mine shaft gullet opening wide to gobble him up. In that instant, Tyler recalled that fossil remains revealed that mosasaurs possessed a second row of teeth, just forward of the throat at the back of the jaws. This recollection overshadowed everything he just experienced. He felt a vibration in the water around him, starting faint and growing stronger. He struck out, dog paddling furiously to get away, only to realize he had nothing to swim for other than the far distant beach. In which direction that lay, he had no clue. The vibration grew louder until it became a churning in the water. Tyler breathed again the moment he realized it was a boat motor. Someone had seen his flare and sped to the rescue. But would it be in time? Was the Mosasaur below him just now turning to begin a low, lethal ascent? He gathered his remaining strength and yelled, waving his arms frantically over his head. Hypothermic, he managed only a faint cry like a lost seal pup. The dense surrounding fog immediately absorbed the noise, hushing and spitting it away with seemingly malicious intent. He called again, raising the volume a bit through tremendous effort, then slumped, feeling his water-soaked clothing begin to pull him under. The Coast Guard auxiliary vessel, Rhiannon II, appeared in the fog. A deckhand keeping careful watch in the buoy in the bow bellowed a warning. The skipper slowed the boat, guiding it expertly past the child. Seconds later, Tyler felt strong hands pluck him from the water. Immediately, he became the helpless center of a flurry of business. They roughly hustled him about as they worked to revive and warm him, until he began to feel he hadn't been rescued at all, but still floated at the mercy of the behemoth. "What's he saying?" Tyler heard through the scraping, bustling chatter. He didn't realize until then that he was saying anything. "He's saying, 'Mosasaur,' over and over," another voice said. "Moso what?" "It's a type of dinosaur," a third voice said. "You gotta be kidding," a woman started. "I don't get it," the first one said uncertainly. Tyler's vision cleared to show a circle of faces hovering above him. They showed concern, confusion, and a hint of fear. One man glanced over his shoulder, perhaps wondering what secret lurked unknown in the surrounding dark water. "Let's get him to the hospital," one said. "He's delirious. Get something warm into him now." They bundled Tyler in wool blankets, then bore him into the flying bridge. As he faded into exhausted sleep, Tyler followed the skipper's gaze across a mysterious black surface of what he had considered only hours ago to be familiar waters. I hope you enjoyed that story from Mark Zeiger, Shy Ghost Dancing, Dark Tales from Southeast Alaska. And the name of that one was Whacking the Groaner. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I'll be right back with another story. Please stay tuned here at 104.3 KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska. On this Halloween night, I do have another story for you. It's titled The Gunny Wolf, and it's a children's Halloween story set in Africa. So stay tuned for that, and it'll be coming up right any second now here at KTOO 104.3 FM in Juneau, Alaska.
The Gunny Wolf, a tale from Africa. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, there lived a mother and her little girl. And they lived right by the edge of the jungle. Every day, the mother would get up and she would make her little girl some breakfast. And then she would turn to her little girl and she would say, "Little girl, don't ever, ever go into the jungle." And every day, little girl would look at her mother and she'd say, "Mama, I would never, ever go into the jungle." One day, the mother got up and she needed to go and visit a friend that day. So she made breakfast just as she always did. And then she looked at her little girl and she said, "I must be on my way now. But remember, little girl, don't ever, ever go into the jungle." And little girl looked at her mother and she said, "Mama, I would never, ever go into the jungle." And little girl stood there and she watched as her mother walked down the road and around the bend. And just as she went around the bend in the road, the little girl turned around to go back into the house. And as she was turning around, she noticed, just out of the corner of her eye, the most beautiful little white flowers that she had ever seen. And they were just at the edge of the jungle. And little girl, she forgot everything that her mother had ever told her. And she walked over to the edge of the jungle. And she began to pick the flowers. And as she picked them, she sang this song.
Kumqua, kiwa, kumqua, kiwa.
And when she had picked all of the white flowers, she turned around to go back into her house. But then, just out of the corner of her other eye, little girl saw the most beautiful purple flowers she had ever seen. And they were just a little ways into the jungle. And little girl forgot everything that her mother had ever told her. And she walked right into the jungle. And then she started to pick the flowers. And as she picked them, she sang.
Kumqua, kiwa, kumqua, kiwa.
And when she was done picking all the flowers, she had the most beautiful bouquet full of white and purple flowers, and she thought, "Oh, my mother will love these flowers when she sees them." And she turned around to go back to her home. But just before she got turned all the way around, she saw the most beautiful, amazing, big, gigantic orange flowers that she had ever seen. And she knew she just had to have them. And there they were, right in the middle of the jungle. And little girl, she forgot everything that her mother had ever told her. And she walked straight into the middle of the jungle. And she started to pick the orange flowers. And as she picked them, she sang.
Kumqua, kiwa, kumqua, kiwa.
And she had the most amazing bouquet of flowers. She had white ones and purple ones and big, gigantic orange ones. And then she stood up and there stood the gunny wolf. And the gunny wolf looked at her and said, "Little girl, sing me that guten, sweeten song again." And the little girl, very, very nervously, she began to sing.
Kumqua, kiwa, kumqua, kiwa.
And as she sang, that old gunny wolf, his eyes they started to close. And his big old head, it started to nod, and he fell asleep. And little girl, she started to run. Pitty-pat, 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 pitty-pat. And then the gunny wolf, he woke up and he started to run. Hunker cha, hunker cha, hunker cha, hunker cha. And when he caught up to little girl, he said, "Little girl, why for you move?" And little girl said, "Who, me? Why, I no move." And the old gunny wolf, he said, "Then sing me that gooten sweeten song again." And so, little girl, she started to sing.
Kum-kwa, ki-wa, kum-kwa, ki-wa.
And as she sang, that old gunny wolf, his head began to nod. And his eyes, they closed. And then he began to snore. Well, little girl, she started to run. Pitty-pat, 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 pitty-pat. And then the old gunny wolf, he woke up and he started to run. Honker chop! Hunker cha, hunker cha, hunker cha. And when he caught up to little girl, he said, "Little girl, why for you move?" And little girl, she said, "Who, me? I no move." And the old gunny wolf, he said, "Then sing me that gooten sweeten song again." And so the little girl, she started to sing.
Kum-kwa, ki-wa, kum-kwa, ki-wa.
And as she sang, the old gunny wolf, he started to fall asleep. His head began to nod. His eyes, they closed tight. He started to snore. And then he fell against an old tree. He slid right down to the ground and curled up into a little ball. And little girl, she started to run. Pitty-pat, 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 pitty-pat. Right to the edge of the jungle. And the old gunny wolf, he woke up. Hunker cha, hunker cha, hunker cha. And little girl, she kept running. Pitty-pat, pitty-pat, pitty-pat. Right to the front gate of her house. And that old gunny wolf, he kept running too. Hunker cha, hunker cha, hunker cha. Pitty-pat, pitty-pat, pitty-pat. The little girl ran right into her house and slammed that door tight. And little girl, well, little girl knew that if she ever, ever went into the jungle again, that she was always smarter and a lot quicker than that old gunny wolf.
I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. That last story, The Gunny Wolf, was written by Catherine Yanez Arreño. And this has been a wonderful Halloween show for me. I hope you enjoyed it here at KTLO 104.3 with Ms. G telling tales. Good night till next time.